Welcome to The Fringe Podcast, a podcast dedicated to the Fox television show Fringe. Chick, 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 brown, chicken, brown cow.
Hi, and welcome to episode 24 of The Fringe Podcast.
I'm Courtney.
I'm Clint.
I'm Daryl.
In this episode, we're going to be reviewing The Fringe comic number 2. It has the frog on the cover.
Yay!
So let's do this like we do an episode. What was your rating of the comic?
Okay, I had two ratings.
Because there's two portions of the comic?
No.
Oh.
Because I read it first and was, bah!
Okay.
And then I read it a couple more times and it was like, meh.
Okay, so what was your initial rating?
My initial rating was a 4.
Okay.
Wow.
And then the new and improved rating?
New and improved rating was a 6.
Okay. Clint?
9.
9?
9.
Do you have separate ratings for the front half and the back half?
No.
Okay.
That was a total rating.
Well, you guys didn't give very good ratings. I mean, you didn't do the full rating like you're supposed to do.
What?
I'm giving it 8 decapitated heads.
Hey, are we doing... Okay.
Courtney, are you laughing over there?
Yes.
I'm sorry. No, I mean, I'm not sorry you're laughing. How dare you have joy at my house.
Dang it. And now you gave me the hiccups.
I'm going to do 9 Rockefeller hot dogs.
Oh, very nice.
I'm going to give it, first time around, 4 crazed chimpanzees.
Oh, I like that.
And then the second time around, 6... endless loops.
I like that. So how do we want to go through this? We don't want to do it page by page. We don't really have time for that.
We could do a recap. Okay. Like we normally do.
Okay.
We could do page by page. We don't have to say everything that happened.
All right. I'll do the recap here. It starts out Bishop and Bell are in a lab, and they're talking about the fact that Einstein didn't wear socks because it was redundant. Shoes cover the feet and socks cover the feet, so he only wore socks. But I don't think it's redundant personally because, to me, socks absorb the sweat, which...
Socks keep your feet warm.
Well, and they reduce the odor. But in case you couldn't hear that, Courtney, who's now in my kitchen trying to get rid of her hiccups, says that socks keep your feet warm. After that, there's a knock on the door. We see a guy come in. And this, we're pretty sure, is the guy... You remember back in the first issue of the comic book, Courtney observed that the Observer was in the comic, and we took a poll on our website, and it was very, very much in favor of, yes, it is the Observer. And this guy walks into the lab looking pretty much exactly like the guy that we thought was the Observer, and he's not the Observer. If he is the Observer, he's got hair.
Yeah, I didn't think it was the Observer.
And his name is... Bradbury. So he starts.
Well, the first time you couldn't tell.
That's right. No, that you're.
And it's not
right.
September.
So, so he walks in to the lab and he says that he's impressed with their work and is familiar with some of their stuff. Gives them a business card and offers them to kind of to be a part of their team. The next thing we see is Bishop. I believe this is Bishop, if I remember right. I'm trying to look for a name here real quick.
Bishop has glasses.
He's talking to an older gentleman, and the older gentleman is saying, look, they made you an offer to come work for them and give you all this money, but all these other scientists have gone to the corporate world one way or the other, and we've never heard from them again. You'll get lost in the corporate world. You know, do yourself a favor and stay away. So the next thing we see is they're flying to Alaska, and we see that there is a secret laboratory area there that is being condoned by the government and a bunch of testing going on. And so they have to get credentials and stuff when they get there, and then they begin showing them around the lab. And what they discover is these scientists, it's a whole bunch of them, have been taking the research that Bell and Bishop have been doing it and actually making it happen, which would take millions and millions of dollars and all kinds of power and stuff. And the Bell and Bishop thought that they were decades away from actually being able to see their work come to fruition because of these types of prohibitive things like money and infrastructure and stuff. So they're pretty surprised to see that the things that they had theorized are actually now being done. There's a female lady there, and what they're doing is they're teleporting a chimpanzee from one place to another, and the chimpanzee returns, and something's not right. It's like King Kong type thing. He's going crazy. They have to taser the mad ape, and Bishop saves the girl. And so
dun, dun, dun.
we see them kind of in their room. It's now nighttime. Bell comes by and he says, hey, let's go. Basically says, let's go check this place out. I don't have a good feeling about this place. And so as they are checking the place out, they come across 8 jugs that are filled with a liquid. Inside there are human heads and nothing else. They've been decapitated. They're still alive. It looks like they've got like an air tube or a food tube going into their brains. And it's all the scientists that the old guy has said had never been heard from again.
It's a think tank.
It is a think tank. And they're kind of like, oh my gosh, look at these people. And at that moment, the chick that Bishop had saved, her name's Rachel, she walks in and she says, oh no, I really wish you two hadn't found this. And that's how part one ends. I liked part one. It's a... You know, we're seeing the relationship of William Bell and Walter Bishop kind of together. What's really, really interesting to me on this is William Bell seems to be completely against this. We're talking about this company says that they are, and they're authorized by the U.S. government, but they're not necessarily, it's not a government agency, I don't believe, that's doing it. But their front is a soap company. They make, and he says, we do. We make fantastic soap. But it's all just a corporate cover-up for all this other stuff that's going on behind the scenes. And William Bell is really put off by this. He wants nothing to do with it. So what happens to William Bell from the point in time where we see him in the comic book, where he is completely kind of repulsed by this whole fake facade that's going on, and the future that we see, well, that's exactly what he has become, or it seems that he has become. We still haven't actually seen William Bell.
To me, and I don't know if anybody else got this, it seems like William Bell's personality is now, in the comic, is what Bishop's is now. Kind of not really trusting of the government and kind of out there, I guess. And it seems like they've almost swapped personalities to me, at least in the comic.
Interesting. You should say that, because in the first comic we saw the little mind meld. So right. maybe some of that exactly is what went on. Any other opinions on the first part there?
I don't know if it was an intentional nod, but I like the nod to Fight Club with the soap company.
The Fresh Start Soap Company.
Yeah,
is that from Fight Club?
Well, Tyler Durden, who's the main character in Fight Club, he works for a soap company. He makes his own soap that he sells for $30 a bar to these fancy department stores. Well, he makes it out of human fat that he gets from liposuction clinics. And it's a running gag that he's selling, you know, these women that have liposuctions fat back to them as soap.
So, that's funny. I haven't seen Fight Club, believe it or not.
Here was my one thought about this part. We see a new entity come into play that could possibly still be around. And Jason and I, this is our collaborative theory, they are player number 2
could
in
be.
The chess game.
Yeah.
Player 1 is Jones, player 2 is the soap company.
I would say that Jones is part of the soap company.
That's kind of where I was going to go, too. Yeah. And let's say, because William Bell is so opposed to what's going on here, let's say he starts out, let's say they don't have the mind meld is not what made the change. Let's say he starts out going, I'm so against this, I'm going to do it the right way. But in doing that, he ends up becoming exactly what he was trying to prevent.
Well, maybe he
gets the other player.
Yeah, he might get to see all the stuff that's going on here and see what kind of awful stuff they're trying to develop for the powers of evil, you know, if you will, and decides that he needs to come up with a similar thing on the opposite side to combat the great or the Fresh Start Soap Company.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know. That was just a thought.
Or maybe, you know, thinking about what Loeb said to Olivia last week, where he says, you're an idiot. We were trying to save you, you know, where from the perspective of we're the good guys here. There's this other organization, and we're trying to beat them. you know, they get this stuff, they're going to do ill will with it. We beat them to it, then we can control it for the good. So maybe that's what Loeb meant last week.
Yeah.
If that's kind of the way this all started, was we're gonna beat them to it so that we can prevent what they're trying to become.
So is it too late to shoot my own theory down? Or too soon, I should say, too soon to shoot my own theory down?
No, of course not.
Well, I'm just sitting here thinking more through this. And Jones, mostly because of what you said, Jones being part of the soap company, They knew about Bishop's teleportation device because they broke into all of his lockboxes in his banks.
Right.
So they knew that they knew about that technology and that it worked. So I still think they are player. I guess now that would make them player one because I put them in with Jones. So I'm back to square one with having only one player unless I'm tossing in Massive Dynamic.
Right. And I'm saying Massive Dynamic is working off the assumption that even though we haven't seen William Bell, he is the head of Massive Dynamic. And so that's where player two comes into play.
And I think I like that because Bishop is working for the soap company because he was not put off at all by all the money they're throwing at him. So he's like, sweet. Maybe that's a parting of ways for Bishop and Bell that we'll see later.
Maybe so.
Okay.
It's interesting.
I like that theory.
They're in a precarious position when we leave them. Rachel has just discovered them. They have just discovered the think tank, as Courtney so humorously put it. That's one of those game-changing moments. It's like, now you know too much. Now I'm going to have to kill you or something like that. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see if we see. I mean, we know they get out of this situation. We just don't know how. So I don't know if they're going to show that to us or not, but that's interesting.
Or does Bill get out of that situation? Maybe that's why we don't see him.
And you got to go to Alaska and you see his head in a jug.
Yeah.
All right, Clint, take us to Strangers on a Train. Yes. I didn't mention, though, that the first part was called Bell and Bishop Part 2, Excellent Soap.
Okay, the second part is called Strangers on a Train. I don't know if that's actually a nod to the Alfred Hitchcock movie or not, but
I personally think that this was a really big nod to Twilight Zone / Alfred Hitchcock type stuff, so probably so.
Yeah, so the first thing we see is somebody that looks like they're coming out of a daze, and they hear Next Stop Hoboken. They've got a handcuff that's open. They ask a bum on the train, what happened to the case I had? He said, I don't know what you're talking about. What's wrong with your face? He's got a, looks like a bloody face. He gets off the train. He thinks maybe it'll be fine. They won't realize the case is gone. And then there's a gun to his head. Fast forward to a different setting in a bar. The guy with the receding hairline says that our agency has a zero tolerance policy. But he's making an exception and that you need to go find the case. So he goes and contacts his tech guru guy, who's got a lab full of computers, says that he needs help finding something that he lost, goes through all the normal steps, the CIA, the mafia. None of those guys have it. He doesn't have any intel. But he does know a guy, and he gives him a phone number. They said to be careful. Frabel is his name. So he calls Frabel, agrees to meet him near Rockefeller Center. He says that he'll be the one out walking the dogs, and cut to the next scene, and he's a hot dog vendor. He hands him a device that said it'll be blue. There's the blue, glowing blue.
The blue lights.
Blue lights. Says it'll be blue, and when you get closer, it'll turn yellow and then red. So he goes, it turns blue, yellow, and then red. He ends up choking a guy, holding him over the banister at a train station, and then it goes blue again. So the guy obviously didn't have it. So he starts walking around again. You see it go yellow and then red as he approaches a train. He follows a guy in a trench coat onto the train. Pistol whips him, smacks him on the head. You see the Fresh Start Soap Company on the briefcase. Turns around, and it's actually himself.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. And he thinks, how am I supposed to get the case off? He realizes that he has the key to the handcuffs, takes the case and runs, and then it cuts back to the same three frames that we saw at the beginning. That's it.
An endless loop is what, that's why Courtney gave it however many.
Six.
Endless loops. So, Clint, what'd you think about that?
I thought it was pretty cool. I thought it was a really neat concept. I guess the reason that it turned red originally was that he was detecting himself, maybe? or maybe he was, maybe he was going through the process of time travel. So I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah. I loved this. I think mostly because it reminded me of an episode of The Twilight Zone, which the more I watch The Twilight Zone, the bigger of a fan I am.
It was so original, wasn't it? It was like nothing else on TV at the time.
Absolutely. I mean, so much since then has been ripped off of The Twilight Zone, and for good reason. I mean, it's genius stuff. And this episode here that we saw in the comic is completely like something we would have seen where... I mean, like Courtney and I were talking about earlier, this kind of boggles the mind where the opening scene, he wakes up, his briefcase is missing. We go through the episode only to learn that he stole the briefcase from himself, and as he wakes up, his briefcase is missing. So he's going to continue going on through that loop of trying to find the briefcase and stealing it from himself. And it just really boggles the mind. It creates a paradox. So in trying to learn about time travel and paradoxes, which I didn't learn much, but I did some searching on Wikipedia today, and I found an interesting article called Zeno's Paradox. Do you know anything about that?
Zeno's?
Zeno's Paradox. And why I bring this up is because from the pilot episode, when we saw the kayak and Olivia's kind of mind meld with John Scott, the word Zeno was on... the kayak.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, so this is one of those things I'm thinking we might get back to during the off weeks that we have coming up, because there's definitely some research here that needs to be done before we can understand it and try to explain it. But it's definitely got my interest piqued, and it's on my list of things to research. I was hoping you might have some sort of knowledge about it.
I've never heard of Zeno's Paradox, but I certainly will look it up now.
Courtney, you got any thoughts on the second half of the comic?
Well, I have been a little confused, and I've been trying to get the chat people to hook a sister up.
Okay.
But they couldn't see my my numbers in between my fingers.
I see.
Looks like a clock, but...
Is this at the very end or beginning?
It's at both, actually.
It's the thing. I think it's just in there just to prove that he's in a loop. It's the exact moment at the beginning of the episode as it is at the end of the episode.
Well, because it says 11:05:04:16, and my first thought was, oh, well, it's 11:05:04, and I was like, oh, where's the 16 go?
Right.
And then we kind of discussed that maybe that was like 11:05, the sub leaves the first station, and then 4:16, it arrives at the last station on its... leg.
I don't think so.
And, well, and I don't know. That's why I'm trying to figure it out. I've never ridden a subway train, so I have no idea.
I have. I've never seen him with a clock like that on there, but...
You know, I've never seen a clock that's that accurate. I do know that cesium atomic clocks are that accurate, and they have those same red letters. So
okay.
I don't know if it has an atomic clock in it, and that we just got a snapshot of it, but you can't see the numbers on that last digit because they're moving so fast.
I see. Well, when you're looking at an actual atomic clock, yeah. I think I know I'm guilty of this. With picking out too detailed on this. I think that's what we're doing here, though. Is I think the whole point of it is to show it's the exact same time at the beginning and at the end. One thing I'm going to do, I'm going to post on our show notes area of this podcast. I got a video emailed to me this week, and I emailed it to the podcast crew here. It talks about the 10 dimensions of time and space. Did you get a chance to look at that, either one of you guys?
No.
Still haven't had a chance to watch it.
And one of the things, it's a cartoon illustrated type of video, and it's hard to stay with, but I don't know how it could have been any more plainly explained. It's just when you talk about 10 dimensions, I mean, come on, you're getting pretty complex, right? But it talks about, it even gives an illustration of how you could take a piece of paper and twist it and make a loop out of it.
Yeah.
And if you take your pen and you go all the way around it, your pen has never left the surface of the paper, and yet it has made a mark on two dimensions, both sides of the paper at this, you know, without having lifted its point. And I think that's what we're seeing here is two dimensions of time and space being carried out at the same time. Not that I fully understand that, but I think that's how I can best wrap my brain around this time loop that we're seeing here. So I'll post a link to that video in our show notes area.
I had a good thought about the soap company with this. Let me think for just a second. I'm getting tired. I think my thought was that this was an experiment by the soap users. They are the soap company. I think that they are doing an experiment. I don't think they have anything really to deliver. I think that it's just an experiment. A weird, mean, horrible experiment. And then my other question was, where does the guy go when he gets off the train?
Yeah, the guy that gets off the train with the briefcase, we don't know where he goes.
Yeah, and that's
the guy who
know.
Gets the part of himself that gets it stolen is in this endless loop, which they can end at any time. They simply kill the guy who gets beat up, or they reassign him when, instead of saying you have 12 hours or whatever it was to fix this, make it right, they can say, you know, we're going to give you some grace. Here's your new assignment. You better get this one right. And the loop ends in either of those situations.
Did you ever see the movie Primer?
I don't think so, but maybe.
You might like it. It's about that. It's about endless loops, and these guys invent a time machine and end up making multiple copies of themselves at a particular time, and they have to end up killing their counterparts.
Right, yeah. Right. Frog King says, maybe you could represent the alternate dimensions in soap bubbles, or use a hot cup of hot tea as a Brownian motion generator, with apologies to Douglas Adams.
I don't understand it.
those are, I think, examples used by Douglas Adams in Hitchhiker's Guide
to the Galaxy.
Or to the, yeah, la 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 la.
La 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 la.
La la.
Oh, my word.
La 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 la.
Never do that again. Stay out of my brain.
Loving you.
No.
Okay, moving on.
Who's going to hit the high note? Well, let's wrap this thing up, shall we?
David Wu. That should be your next song for French monks. There you go, Lobin' You. All right.
All right. Well,
so should we throw our contact info out there one more time?
Yeah.
Do we have any spoilers? I thought we did.
No, we just did them.
The comic book.
Okay, that was
our spoiler.
I thought, didn't we have some. I will
throw this spoiler out there. TV Guide did a video interview with the gentleman who plays Dr. Jones, Mr. Jones, I guess.
Yes, Dr. Jones.
And one of the questions they asked him was, what do you think might be the technology behind the teleportation that we saw? How did you guys pull that off? And he says, I can't respond to that because we filmed that already. I know how it happened, and you're going to see it soon.
Ooh.
So I was like, yes, questions answered.
Yay.
Jared Harris is what Jennifer says his name is. Thank you for that. I couldn't think of it. Okay, you got anything else, Courtney?
No.
Clint?
I'm done. I've negativitized this episode long enough, and I'm ready for next week.
Yeah.
All right. Well, give us a call on the Fringe phone.
206-426-5898.
And be sure and call in with your favorite food of the week. Give us your name, your state, or your country, and all that stuff like we've told you. You'll be entered to win a drawing to win the first two comics. See.
And we will announce the winner next Thursday. And we will do this live chat thing again.
That's right. No guarantees on the video, though.
Yes.
You need to visit our forum at thefringepodcast.com/forum and give us your questions to ask to the cast and crew of Fringe.
You're more than welcome to send us audio, text, or non-naughty video comment to feedback@thefringepodcast.com.
That will also work for your contest entry.
Yes.
If you are out of country.
Okay.
Yay, Frog King is hooked. Nice. We're glad that you stumbled upon us. That's pretty hilarious, really. Me likes.
So until next time.
Namaste.
Stay on the Fringe.
Go noodling.